Sports Radio. The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
My good afternoon. Man in Line is on today, and the Chief Minister is here, Alfred Cannon, MHK, the Aaron Michael MHK with us. So if you want to raise anything, by all means call 66 13 68, text or WhatsApp on 166 177, email studio@manxradio.com. We're coming to the end of the administration leading into another general election, so I wonder what your thoughts are on reflection of how we've coped, what we're doing, and your thoughts for the future. The Chief Minister on Man in Line between now and one. And Faster Mai, good afternoon, Chief Minister.
Faster Mai, Andy.
Okay, let me get straight into it. First of all, we've just heard about the inflation. The annual rate is now 4.9. How do you see that?
Well, obviously, it's concerning. There is a war going on in the Middle East that has impact. I mean, the primary driver, of course, is oil and fuel that has driven that inflation figure up. It is not as bad as it was during the Ukraine crisis. It's not sort of at that peak yet, but it's obviously concerning. That will put pressure on families. Of course, it will. It will put pressure on food prices. Of course, it will. It will put pressure in other areas. Andy, this is the third crisis that this government has had to deal with in its tenure. We had the coronavirus pandemic. This government was responsible for taking us out of that pandemic, restoring the economic equilibrium. We immediately faced the Ukraine crisis and the rise of inflation to 10, 11, 12% and the problems that were impacted in terms of pricing and costs for businesses and for families. We've taken everybody through that. We took direct action at that time. This is the third time that we have dealt with a potential crisis. Of course, it's too early for us to take direct action at this point. I mean, prices are starting to creep up. We don't know when this war is going to end. We have taken a firm strategy at the moment in terms of monitoring it, understanding where the price point impacts are, accepting that families in some areas will be under pressure, particularly if they've got heating oil, and we're noting the increase in fuel and diesel. But of course, we have to take a responsible view as well with our finances. So we stand by, ready to act if this situation continues in the same vein or indeed worsens, although I think we've been very, very clear. Our sort of key point in that will be the autumn, winter, if particularly, because I think that's when people will really start to feel the pressure if it goes on. So, look, we've come through all this and the island is still standing. You know, unemployment remains incredibly low. I know it's tough out there for businesses, and there has been some contraction, but there's also been areas that have seen some positive growth, both within financial services and in other sectors of the economy. We've resolved a lot of the problems at the airport. We've delivered a strong Securing Our Island strategy. We're continuing to invest in our law enforcement agencies. We're looking towards digital aids to help us ensure that we keep everybody safe on the island. We're consulting about security on the steam packet. And today, Andy, you will see very, very soon that the government has announced major reforms to the immigration process, both to strengthen that process in terms of the security that'll bring and ensuring that employers are going through the full process of recruiting both on island and within the CTA before they reach for the application forms to bring people to the island from other routes.
Can I just take you back to oil and fuel at the moment? So distribution, how are we for supplies? What about Ronald's Way and what about the steam packet? Have they got supplies for the future? Is that secure?
So we have been in constant contact with the UK government. There are regular meetings between our senior officials and the United Kingdom relevant agencies in terms of fuel supplies, the distribution mechanisms. We continue to be in a position where the supplies are secure, particularly when it comes to petrol, diesel, and oil supplies. And of course, if there were ever to be a change in that, then of course the government would be standing ready to take the appropriate action. But Andy, that, as we understand it, remains secure and firm. There is obviously a price point issue at the moment. And of course, so much is now dependent on what happens in the Middle East and whether or not Iran and America can find the ground that they need to declare the war is over, and so that we can all start to move forward in terms of more stability in the economy.
Okay, a note in from Margaret, who said, to avoid conflict of interest, current and prospective MHKs apparently can't comment or indicate they're for or against the proposed Ørsted Morvannon wind farm. MHKs act on behalf of the people of the Isle of Man, as this is one of the most contentious projects that Margaret can ever remember. How are the Manx public going to decide who to vote for if they don't know if prospective candidates for September's general election are for or against the offshore wind farm?
So that's absolutely correct. I think there is, if as with any planning application, Andy, if a public elected representative ultimately sets out a position, a clearly stated position with regards to their views on that planning application, then when the decision point comes, particularly this is going to be a problem for any future minister in the government, when that decision point comes, they will be regarded as being conflicted. And I'm sure they will get clear advice and they will have to leave the room when that decision is made. What I would say to Margaret, and to everybody, in fact, is that, you know, following this, when this process comes to its conclusion, the inspectors will lay a report before the Council of Ministers, which will contain recommendations. The Council of Ministers at the time will then have a responsibility to examine that and then make a decision. And any decision they make must be accompanied by a full explanation from them as to why they have gone down that route. If it is the case at the time that the Council of Ministers make a yes decision, then the matter still has to go before Tynwald. And at that point, Tynwald members are free to vote irrespective of any previous position that they may have adopted. They're absolutely fully entitled to respect the democratic capacity in which people have been elected. So, you know, at that point, people can make a decision. So, you know, this is slightly more nuanced than just simply, you know, I can't discuss it. But yes, absolutely, you know, public representatives who make an outright declaration run the risk of being conflicted up until the point that they then are asked to make a vote.
And when is the first report out? When will that recommendation be?
Well, I think it's been fairly clear that there is an understanding that it's probably going to be one of the first things that a new Council of Ministers will have to deal with. So before the end of the year, if not in the autumn.
Okay. We've got a message from the answer phone now. And this is...
Hi, it's a couple of questions for the Chief Minister. First of all, how many areas or departments of government has the Auditor General done a check on since being put in post? How many staff did they have on island? And thirdly, what skills do you think it takes to make a good leader and have the respect of the staff and the taxpayers? Thank you. Bye.
Okay.
I can't answer the question of how many audits the AG, Auditor General has done. I think he has a staff of approximately 2 to 3 members of staff. And in terms of leadership, you know, I think you need somebody who obviously is in touch with the actual facts of what is actually happening, is able to communicate that effectively, and also has a vision for the future in terms of understanding how the actions or plans that government is undertaking fit in to the vision for the future of the island.
Okay. If you'd known then what you know now, would you still have gone for Chief Minister?
And absolutely, it's been the absolute privilege to have undertaken this role. Of course, it's been a challenging 5 years. But as I started off, you know, at the beginning of this, I outlined, you know, what this government has achieved despite the pressures that we have been under. And yeah, I mean, it's an absolute privilege to serve, and it's been an honour to be the Chief Minister.
Okay, well, I've had half a dozen people. I was going to ask this at the end of the programme. We may as well get it over with now. Will you be standing in September?
It's just too early to answer that, Andy. I hope people will understand that the Council of Ministers still has a significant job to do. There are many issues that we are currently examining. There's quite a weight of legislation to get through. We're in the position of preparing for MoneyVal, as we discussed. We're looking at the Iran crisis, the impact that that's having on our economy and local community. There are still decisions to be made, but I will make my intentions clear as soon as I feel it is reasonable to do so. And there is, of course, a huge amount, and rightly so, that the public will want to know, that absolutely want to know, of course, what the key issues are, and will absolutely want the opportunity to discuss that, I'm sure, with any representatives who are putting themselves forward to stand again. So I do appreciate there is an urgency, but I also ask for a little bit of understanding, because there are still key decisions to be made and work to be done that is probably best done without the context of having declared or not declared for an election.
Okay, there's going to be a sitting during TT, isn't there?
There will be, I think we've asked for a special sitting of the House of Keys in practice week, because there is a weight of legislation, important legislation, some of it connected to the MoneyVal assessment, and we need every opportunity to get this through so that the island's in the best possible place to pass this critical and key assessment that will take place in the autumn.
Okay, and where do you stand on MoneyVal? I've heard people feeling ranging from very confident to quite confident about MoneyVal. Where does the Chief Minister sit?
Look, we've worked incredibly hard to meet the grading framework that has been put in front of us. That has meant that we've had to put a lot of pressure on the private sector to tighten up. We've had to tighten up on our legislation, it is very hard bureaucratically and at the moment to undertake financial services work, particularly in what is a very challenging economic environment. But if we don't get through this MoneyVal assessment, then it may be even more challenging for us. We're committed to meeting international standards. We've invested significant sums, but more importantly, we've put a huge amount of effort and work into getting the island into the right place. We've worked with business and industry. We've liaised with business and industry. I think everybody is on the same page. And we're, of course, now coming to the culmination of this. The final bits of legislation will be in place, and we'll prepare for some of the operational aspects of the examination that will take place, as I said, in September and October this year.
Okay, could you just expand a little more about the immigration rules that are coming in, that will be in fairly shortly?
Yeah, so we are aligning ourselves more with some of the UK, United Kingdom standards. I think particularly we will be raising the salary threshold now for visa applications. We will also be requiring companies to properly evidence that they have been through a full and exhaustive recruitment process, both on the Isle of Man, the United Kingdom, and then subsequently within the common travel area. And then once we're satisfied that all those processes have been undertaken, satisfied that the skills that they're being sought abroad, basically internationally, match the requirements we've set out from a salary perspective, then we will be in a position to issue the visas. And then furthermore, there is some caveat for identifying where there is clear recruitment issues in certain sectors, and some jobs can be more clearly identified as being accessible via the visa route at an earlier stage. But that will all be set out later today in a press release. Andy, I think both security, first of all, is absolutely important to us. We want to maintain the quality of life that we have here on the island. I've already talked about what we've done to invest on that, what we're doing in terms of further strategic enhancements to make sure that we are absolutely safe and secure, that people can live here, I hope, in peace and harmony, knowing that they can go about their daily lives without the threat of insecurity or violence. I have to say at this point, I just want to say that I think the police force have done an incredible job over the last 3 or 4 years in quite challenging and tough circumstances. We need to enable them to keep us safe moving forward, and that will also be part of our future sort of immigration reviews, if you like, in terms of understanding how they interact more with the immigration service. But you know, we as an island over the last five, we as a government and as an island have remained incredibly safe despite a lot of challenges, despite the threat from serious and organised crime, and I intend to absolutely keep it this way for as long as certainly as I remain part of the council of ministers, and I hope long into the future.
Do you think the chief constable is doing a good job?
I do think the chief constable is doing a good job. I've been, you know, I'm sure there's aspects of community policing which frustrate people at time. I know there's not we're not without one or two issues, but you know, the challenges that force is having to face, where they're having to focus their efforts around our borders, around the county lines, the drug gangs, the criminals, I think they've done an incredible job in terms of keeping us all safe. I see that from an inside perspective. It's not always apparent to the general public, but yes, I'm very pleased with the way that the Chief Constable and his senior team, and indeed all the officers throughout the force, have gone about their business.
Okay, Juan. Hello, Juan. You're live with the Chief Minister.
Thanks, Andy. Alf, how are you?
Very good, Juan.
Good, good. Yeah, just following on actually from a couple of points that you made there. I think the people on the islands don't realise the importance of the safety that we have here. From someone who travels quite a lot and looking at the areas that I've been in and the deaths and the murders, I think we're very lucky to have what we have here. I do think the armed policing needs looking at, but generally I agree with you in Russ Foster's approach on looking out for things on the island. Brings me on to a point that you were talking about there about visas, etc. So we have, I mean, one point in particular with no names mentioned. We have an electrician, say, that's been employed and contracted by government that comes from the African nations. So on that point, I'm looking at the apprenticeship scheme, which has now been delayed, and the skill set that we have on the island for electricians and plumbers. And I have to ask the reason why we're employing people from so far away. On the point of that as well, I noticed that it's been a job creation, 117 to 129,000 a year for Grace Eames, who's the new chief people officer, leading into human resources, delivering people strategy, and of course then great three words, DEI, diversity, equity and inclusion, which I think has become quite divisive in the last few years. I would ask you, how involved is the Isle of Man in pursuing DEIs? And also, are you being instructed from the UK to do DEIs, which is giving us issues?
So just to answer your first point, I mean, I'm sure you'll understand, it's not possible for me to specifically talk about an employment issue. And indeed, I you know, it's hard to understand exactly what the full circumstances are of, you know, anybody employed by the Isle of Man government who may have needed a work permit or may have needed a visa. And I certainly don't want to be jumping to any conclusion. But to move on to your second point, look, first of all, a chief people officer has been appointed. That is a replacement role. I, the current head of director of HR on the Isle of Man, is retiring, and Ms. Eames will take her place. Of course, you've got to have somebody at the top to head up that part of the organisation. And look, you know, diversity and equality, this is all very much part of standard employment approaches these days, and rightly so. And I think it's absolutely important that our employees respect each other, and that particularly a government takes a healthy interest in the makeup of the society that it is representing. But you know, I've also been very much of the belief that anybody, you know, government should employ the best person for the job, and that should be really the standard metric by which anybody is then employed by the government.
Juan?
Yeah, I, I'm, I think you sidestepped a little tiny bit there, Alf. I mean, my point on DEI is now, and you look at alternative political groups that are coming into the UK now, and they're saying DEI has evolved into a diversive entity now, which is a problem and could be a problem here. You know, we've got a government that may be obsessed with optics rather than outcomes, and diversity slogans instead of systems that actually created diversity to start with and made it possible. And again, I know we're not going into individual employment issues here, but for a skill set of electricians or, say, plumbers, when you're employing people from nations far away, when we have our own people here, I kind of still ask the question on that, really, which you didn't kind of answer. So, you know, I just feel that the government is too invested, either the civil servants or the attitude of the civil servants in a bigger, wider picture rather than looking out for our island people.
So I don't think we should try and create crisis when there isn't one that's actually really apparent to me. There are no DEI quotas that I am aware of. As far as I know and believe, the government is recruiting the best people for the job, irrespective of where they may have come from in terms of their, eligibility to be here on the Isle of Man. Absolutely, we should, and this is what we've just outlined in terms of the tightening up of the immigration process. Employers are expected to recruit locally first. If they cannot find the staff, then of course they can go out further into the United Kingdom, which has always been the case, or the common travel area, to find those staff. And then thirdly, beyond that, if they cannot find the appropriate staff, can demonstrate they've been through a full recruitment process, they can go further afield. And that should be the standard operating procedure for the Isle of Man government. And it's really difficult for me just to comment on, you know, a particular individual or a case that you brought before me without seeing all the facts around that.
A final word, John?
Yeah, I understand that I know you want to dance around it, but you know, at the end of the day, we've got electricians, which is and plumbers and stuff like that. You're basically saying that there's no one fitted the remit on the island or within England. I find that hard to accept, and I know you can't comment on an individual case, but Rome fell on a decadence within.
Okay.
I just have to challenge you a bit. I'm not trying to dance around it at all. You know, I'm absolutely crystal clear that first and foremost, any employer for any job should look on the Isle of Man first to locally qualified individuals who may be fit to do that job. Secondly, the process, as has always been, and this is one of the reasons why we're absolutely reinforcing it as a government at the moment, is secondly to look within the common travel area as the next positioning for people to come to the Isle of Man. And then thirdly, you know, the next base is to be able to look further afield. We have to accept there are skills shortages in certain areas. We have to accept that if we're going to grow the economy and develop, we need to find people to fill the jobs and the vacancies. But this government particularly also accepts that protecting the quality of life, protecting the security of the island is absolutely vital. And part of that is ensuring that we have proper processes for people to follow that make it easier for us to ensure that we are able to do the right and relevant checks so that anybody coming to the Isle of Man has as much due diligence and verification enabled as possible.
Okay, if people are aware that any employer is not playing the game, what do they do?
Well, they report it, Andy. And there are various government agencies to report it. But they just pick up the phone to the Isle of Man Treasury, who look after immigration at the moment, and report it. And if they're concerned, then either make a report to the constabulary, or indeed make a report to any officer of government or MHK. And we will make sure that the information that they have got concerns about is passed to the relevant people, and that it will be taken seriously.
But it's firm information, not just skeet, you need.
Well, of course, Andy. Okay. I mean, look, I've had dealt with a number of these instances, as we've had to adjust to the fact that we've had skills shortages, that coronavirus and the pandemic and coming out of that seem to create this sort of drain of resources out of the economy, and we've had to adjust like everybody else has. And frankly, over that period of time, we've also recognised that we've had to tighten up in certain areas. And again, the announcements today will also demonstrate, that we're making further advancements on that, and also recognizing that the situation has changed and the unemployment levels, for example, are clearly higher now within our neighbors than has previously been the case. So, we've got to be robust in terms of our processes and making sure that, as I say, we are doing the right thing both for local skills, for people on the island, but also accepting there have been clear challenges in the employment market, and that people, businesses do need to find those skills, and that they need a route to be able to find those skills.
Okay. So, Juan, there it is. If you know anything that's absolutely concrete, you need to call Treasury and tell them.
Well, I do, but on what you're saying there, we diverted off onto private people and private companies. This is government that's employed people.
Okay, all right, Joe, all right, you made your point. We appreciate that. Patsy dropped a note in and just said, reading between the lines of what the Chief Minister's saying and has been saying previously on your programme, we need more workers, because obviously we need more taxpayers, we need more skilled professionals, and we need a larger economy to keep the services viable on the public service, viable on the Isle of Man. But if we don't have affordable housing or enough GPs, dentists or capacity at the hospital, if people can't afford childcare and the rental supply is being constricted, we have an infrastructure that'll absorb that growth. Where do we stand, Chief Minister?
Well, it's a complex issue, and it's basically where we stand. I mean, I think, when I look at the broad range of questions that will inevitably put by a concerned public in terms of the current positioning of the island, the challenges that we have in the private sector, clearly. I mean, obviously, the Chamber of Commerce were out last week saying the economy should be at the very heart of candidates' thinking. There are other challenges that align with what's just been said, particularly the fact that, I think the key challenge for me for the next government will be addressing this 75 odd million pound deficit that the government is currently running, because this inhibits investment. I think it's inhibiting investment, say, for example, into social housing. I think it's inhibiting investment into some of our capital schemes, our infrastructure, if you like, and that we could be doing more and working faster to, for example, build schools.
So that can't go on.
No, and I think that actually, the first question for me for the next government, how do we ensure that we have, that we've got the mechanisms in place now, the policies, and I've explained to the electorate clearly how we are going to resolve this problem. And it's not simplistic, Andy. This has been going on for 15 plus years now, ever since, 20 years, arguably, if you go right back to that sort of 2008 period. And frankly, I did think we were making progress up until 2020. I think coronavirus has thrown that into some into a different space in terms of the strategic approach that government's had to take. And I don't think we've really recovered the position with enough clarity. So I do think the government's had to do that. And that in part then, I think, leads on to the question that I've just been asked. I'm sorry, I missed the name of your caller there. But
Patsy.
So, very relevant question. But I think that then leads on to, well, what is the capacity for the government to invest properly in some of these areas? But this is not a simplistic equation, because, the economy is changing somewhat. We've seen that contraction with e-gaming. I don't think it's fair to say there has been some contraction in financial services, but we've also seen gains, particularly in that insurance sector. We've seen a number of high net worths coming to the island recently, all of whom have been active investors in the island, enabling that sort of funds, if you like, in a more positive way, because would be key to helping us grow that economic piece. But ultimately, if the money is not then being sort of recovered by government and you can't demonstrate an efficient and effective use of those funds in a balanced way, we're not going to have that extra cash to invest in those key areas, the sort of housing, particularly social housing area and the other infrastructure areas. So look, it's a big challenge. This is just not, I think it goes to the point I was just saying before, this is not simplistic. Glossy brochures are not going to solve these problems. We do need to put together some thought process about how you proactively recognize this. And I do think this goes very much to the heart of developing our future economy, but also solving some of the problems that Patsy has quite correctly identified.
How many more workers do you think we need? How many more workers generating tax revenues and NI do you think we need to be getting to where you would like us to be? 4,000, 5,000?
Well, I mean, I think that's a tricky question. I mean, knowing now and looking back in terms of how, you know, that plan, the government plan, and we have filled those jobs and we have created those 1,800 extra jobs. And it has helped us, you know, keep our public services on track. Absolutely. And I think it's helped keep us as an island on track. It's a bit of a tricky question because, you know, as I say, there's lots of different challenges. We've had all the global economic challenges that impact on the island. We've had a contraction in certain sectors. I think legislation has been the base in terms of helping us identify new sectors and regulating them in the past. But at the moment, there is not any clarity necessarily on what the next new big thing is. Having said that, we're getting, I think, opportunities through high net worth investment, property investment, business investment. And I know there are people actively out there at the moment trying to help solve that problem by bringing new businesses to the island. And of course, we've got a demographic attached to that as well. That is, as you know, an aging demographic, and that causes us problems because it means potentially with people having less kids, there's not necessarily the same workforce organically coming in. So, Andy, listen, I mean, I think that we have to understand that this is just not simplistic. That's not just going to be solved by clicking your fingers and saying, well, that one piece by itself is going to solve our problems. I think for me, you've got to draw this back to the government balance sheet. That's clearly part of identifying the issue moving forward. And then, of course, you know, I think we need to recognise, we need to try and absolutely find those new areas for development, for new business. We've got to enhance the skills base, the training base, and so it goes on.
OK, the Chief Minister is with us through till one. You can call, text, email or WhatsApp.
A new chapter has begun at Swiss Chalet Glen Helen with the Isle of Man Farm Shop. Celebrating local Manx produce, IOM Farm Shop brings together the island's farmers, fishers, growers and makers with a boutique shop and fantastic deli takeaway service nestled in the island's most beautiful valley. Open Monday to Saturday, 9:30 to 5:30 and Sundays 10 till 4. The Isle of Man Farm Shop. Visit farmshop.im or find them on Facebook.
Most builders start with a hammer and saw. Manx Construction start with ideas and imagination. For new build, extension or home office, Manx Construction offer full service from planning to completion. Call Tony on 452 688.
A great night's sleep got even better with Zed's Bedding Store. From quality Beldorm bed linen and mattress protectors, fleece and woven throws, to luxury duvets from the fine bedding company, Zed's Bedding Ramsey, next to Isle of Man Bank.
Bigger jackpots, more prizes, more chances to win. There's never been a better time to play the Hospice Lottery. We've now doubled the number of guaranteed monthly cash prizes to over 100, which means you now have the best ever odds for winning prizes. Plus, our monthly rollover jackpots build up to an incredible £10,000. Tickets are just £5, so don't miss out and help a great local cause too. Visit hospice.org.im now.
Players must be over 16. Terms and conditions apply.
The latest edition of Manx Radio's Breath Mindfulness podcast with Karen Hardman is available now.
Imagine you have just stepped into a cool swimming pool. It's a glorious hot afternoon.
Brought to you by The Good Health Store on Station Road in Port Erin.
This place reminds you that life can be slower, and here, haste is not needed.
the latest in the Breath Mindfulness series with Karen Hardman and available now at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
21 minutes before one, Stephen's with us now. Hello, Stephen, you're with the Chief Minister.
Good afternoon, Andy. Good afternoon, Chief Minister. And most importantly, good afternoon, listeners. Chief Minister, I noted you spoke earlier in the programme about changes to how we recruit and advertise for people and some of our policies. So, firstly, I'd like to ask, are we now introducing a surcharge, a health surcharge, for new residents who we are attracting for employment? As one of our slogans, I believe, was free healthcare, was advertised, and this must have been a cost to our local healthcare system. And so that's the first point. Are we still advertising free healthcare? Will there be a health surcharge? I did ask this question of your health minister, who said sadly there's not going to be anything in this programme now. If not, why not? Why aren't we addressing this? And secondly, are you aware that within some schools and unbelievably some GP surgeries are asking for interpreters? So possibly the direct employee knows English, but their dependents are coming in and do not have English as a first choice. So there's a big cost there. That's my first point, if you'd like to answer that, and then I've got another one.
So healthcare surcharges is government policy. That needs to be properly introduced, but Timwald has voted on that, and we will be bringing forward proper surcharging to make sure that we are covering our cost, or at least contributing to the cost in that area. Secondly, I mean, clearly, one of the areas that has been of concern, let's face it, we've all been somewhat challenged by the scale of demand that has come forward in terms of the visa applications, particularly from the care sectors, but also other sectors, is the issue of the dependents and their their status in terms of their effectiveness and the contribution that they would make to our economy. And I can tell you that the requirement for them to be able to speak English to a standard is obviously part of the testing process that we are looking to challenge and improve on. But yes, I mean, I think what I would say, generally speaking, is the dependent piece is an area of significant interest to them at the moment, and we will be looking at how that is indeed tightened up. And in fact, my recollection is that there are tighter restrictions on the latest round of announcements that will be made public today, in fact have already been made public today, that will require enhanced scrutiny on dependents in the future in certain routes that are being followed.
Okay, when will the health surcharge be? When's that scheduled?
I haven't got a date, okay. Andy.
I mean, but some people will say that we've allowed many more people to come in, and Timwald can be very nimble when it wants.
Well, I think basically the focus is early next year, right, on having that in. I mean, that will be again for the new government, but I think the plans are to ensure that that is in place and operational early next year.
Stephen?
So the current wave in the UK is called the Boris wave. I don't know who we're going to attribute this, the wave we've had in the last 5 years here, where we've significantly increased the population. My next point is, if Chief Minister, as you recall, the last time you were here, I did speak about access to cash and the decline of post offices, and I did ask, would you go away and reflect on the problem? And I asked the same question to your Minister for the Department of Enterprise, and it was a most unsatisfactory answer. He merely reissued the last one he said, which was, you got ATMs and that's your solution. And funnily enough, in Peel, a friend of mine said to me, Stephen, when you were on to the Minister for the Department of Enterprise, and he said, well, you've got ATMs, the ATM, the sole ATM, and Peel was not working that week, because he come down and told me especially. So I ask again, what will you do to improve access to cash universally on the island, and specifically within the area that you represent, which is the north and the west in particular? Will there ever be an instruction to the banks to provide banking hubs, or is that just simply for the birds?
Well, Stephen, I think, and I recall correctly, the last time we spoke, I did say that, you know, can't just there's no power to instruct banks to do anything. I accept this remains a challenging issue, and that solutions are thin on the ground. It's clearly, I'm also very conscious that there's been another round of pressure on sub post offices, which is not necessarily making things any easier. And of course, there's been a digitalisation process and the MyCard process. Stephen, it remains an issue. I can't stand here today or sit here today and give you clarity on a policy at the moment that is resolving the issue. It's something that we are conscious of. Access to cash remains a question mark for government in terms of trying to find resolution. But instructing banks to open branches or instructing banks to put ATMs in is not at the moment something that is within our gift, and we would almost certainly have to have some sort of legislation around that.
Is there an ATM in Aaron Michael at all? Balaff in Andreas? Bride?
No.
I think there's cash back at some of the shops.
You can get cash back. In fact, I used cash back very recently. But of course, it is small amounts. You can get cash back. And normally, retailers are will reasonably do that. But it is small amounts. These are village shops, and they're not carrying huge amounts of cash.
Stephen, what's your suggestion?
Suggestion for the Chief Minister is, when he's finished this programme, is to go away and Google access to cash in the UK. And I think it's the Financial Conduct Authority in the UK which has necessary legislation. If a sufficient number of people in an area ask for a review of their access to cash, and within their legislation, it's possible to instruct banks to get together and have banking hubs. Now, I know that the answer some people will give me is, well, the Isle of Man is far too small and we don't have the population. But that's the whole point. We are the Isle of Man. We're not the UK. And is there nothing within our Financial Supervision Commission to look at this problem of access to cash? If not, possibly it does need strengthening, legislation needs strengthening to give us access to cash, because what your answer is no different than the Minister for the Enterprise that said. So it's disappointing, and I do think again I will ask you to go away and reflect and see what can be done. Otherwise, it's another nail in the coffin for small communities and the elderly people who, and those who don't have internet access or can't do it, to do their business.
Okay. All right, Stephen, we appreciate that.
Point taken.
Okay. Thanks for that. We've got a line of people waiting to get on in just a moment.
Q-Plus is much more than a plumbing and heating trade counter. Come and explore the largest bathroom showroom on the island, where we're always updating our displays and stocking the latest bathroom designs and trends to make sure we have just what you're looking for. Visit Q-Plus on Snugborough Trading Estate, or find us on Facebook to see some fabulous bathroom inspiration. Q-Plus.co.il.
Construction waste today.
Tells recycle for another day.
A builder's skip or two.
Tells skips will bring to you.
At Tells Skip Hire and Waste Disposal in Snugborough, you only pay for the waste you bring. For waste disposal and skips, give us a call on 677 137. That's 677 137. Visit Tells today or find Tells Limited on Facebook.
Call Tells Skips today.
677 137.
Scrap metal coming out of your ears. then there's only one place to call, Castaignes Scrap Metal, of course. Castaignes pay top prices for lead, brass, copper, aluminium and stainless steel, as well as ferrous metals, scrap vehicles, and they're even licensed to scrap lead acid batteries. Drop it off today or Castaignes can come and take it away. Castaignes Scrap Metal, Foxtel Road, call 801-337.
You know that IM1?
What? What, the postcode?
No, that show on the radio.
Well, 3FM, Energy...
No, you know, the purple
one. Oh, yeah, right.
Well, they're doing another one of those live shows, IM1 Voting for Dummies.
Yeah, well, we will be, probably, won't we?
Yeah. At the Peel Centenary Centre this coming Saturday the 16th, all proceeds shared between the PCC and Edspace.
No, I don't know him, no.
You're not going?
Nah.
There's free Bushy's beer.
What time is it finishing? IM1, Voting for Dummies. Live at the Peel Centenary Centre this Saturday the 16th of May. Tickets online at centenarycentre.com or from Celtic Guild in Peel or OMA in Ramsey. It's that, or Eurovision.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Hello, Anne, you're live with the Chief Minister. Hello, Anne. In that case, we'll go to David. Hi, David. I'm trying to find David. In that case, we'll find Sue. Hello, Sue. Are you there, Sue?
I am most certainly
well,
here.
Well, thank you, Sue. You're live with the Chief Minister.
Good afternoon. Hello, Mr. Cannon. I've got a complete change of topic, and I'm sure Mr. Cannon knows what mine will be. What I'm wondering now is, obviously, the assisted dying bill has been held up by the UK. I understand why. But Dr. Allinson has put in amendments. I know Mr. Cannon has been against this from the start, but what I'm hoping for now is this was passed by our Parliament, it was passed by Legislative Council, and will Mr. Cannon now support Dr. Allinson in this motion?
Well, I have some real concerns, Sue, as you know, about this legislation, the impact and indeed the framework under which this legislation is being brought forward. Dr. Allinson has clearly got to demonstrate now that his amendments are resilient, that they meet the proper standards, that they will satisfy the Ministry of Justice, and they will make this piece of legislation human rights compliant.
Yeah, I do understand that. But while everyone's prevaricating over this, and I'm sure that he will have made this right, and I believe it's not a huge piece that's got to be put in. I think we already, am I correct in thinking we already had it in the secondary legislation, but it needed putting in the first legislation, the primary legislation. Do I have that correct?
Well, that's correct, Sue, but there's significant amounts of this bill that have consigned vital elements to secondary legislation, and that is one of the reasons why I have significant concerns about the the resilience,
well,
of this legislation.
Surely if they're then put now into the primary legislation, there should be nothing holding it up, because while this goes on, more people are suffering as my husband did. And I know we have so many people, they worry about coercion, and there are people who are worried about disabled, old people. None of those people that are in the bill, and yet I hear it repeatedly. I know there are concerns, and the main one in this instance is the coercion, because the other things are not in the bill. But meanwhile, people like my husband, I get repeatedly good palliative care. He had excellent palliative care. And for most people, that works. But for some people, they become immune to the drugs. And I know you've heard this, and I'm sorry to repeat, but Simon had a driver in each arm and each leg delivering pain relief, as well as pain relief through a peg in his stomach. And he was still in agony because his body was literally decomposing while he was still alive, and there was nothing anyone could do. He had begged for it to stop, and he had already put in place that once we hit the TT, he wanted to starve himself because he couldn't stand the pain back then, and it got progressively worse. All he needed was just 2 weeks before to be allowed to go And I have spoken to people who have been to Dignitas and Holland who have had this, and they've had a lovely death with their friends and family around them. Simon's family had to watch him lie there crying in pain, shouting in pain and begging for it to stop. And somewhere along the line, this legislation, it needs sorting, it needs going through, not delaying for another 2 years so that more people have to suffer as Simon had to suffer.
Okay, Sue, we appreciate that. I just want to ask the Chief Minister then, why was that bill allowed to go to the UK when they obviously saw it as incomplete? Because some people on the island view this as a slap across the face for the Isle of Man.
Well, and Andy, what I would say, I mean, you know, I've heard Sue speak. My heart goes out to her. I absolutely can see the pain and anguish that they and many other families have been through in the end-of-life scenario. I think, you know, first of all, you know, this House of Keys has voted that the legislation would go through. I think I accept that principle. Tim Ward now has a responsibility to ensure that the legislation is robust, is safe, and ultimately secure, and indeed is effective. If it's truly going to be delivered, then, you know, it does need to have all these proper safeguards in it. And that's the process that we are going through at the moment. And Sue, you know, I hope you will respect that I have got some concerns. I know you won't agree with them, but, you know, the length, the amount of time that this bill allows for, the amount of secondary legislation that, in my view, should have been on the face of the bill, the potentials for this not to work operationally are all concerns that I have. And, you know, clearly we'll go through the next stage. But I do so, you know, personally, because this has always been a private member's bill, acknowledging, you know, the serious concerns that you have and many other families will also have when it comes to end-of-life care. And for me, you know, things that we can do to make life easier and smoother for people in these difficult positions, then, you know, I am, of course, in favour of that. But, you know, there are means and ways for it to be achieved, and I think there is some disagreement as to how that can be most effectively implemented. But thank you for your call.
Okay, thank you, Sue. From one contentious issue to another one, a little lighter, it has to be said, and we've only got a minute on this. And that, Chief Minister, comes from Mike, who just says, what's the Chief Minister's view on the horse trams?
Well, the horse trams are going through a process at the moment. Tim Ward have asked for this to be completed. I know the Minister for Infrastructure is working with Treasury as we speak, and I am sure that he will be bringing forward plans in June, Tim Ward, or possibly July if he can't get the financial agreement. But I'm sure it'll all be, we'll have clarity on that before the end of this administration.
In 20 seconds, have you enjoyed your tenure as Chief Minister?
Andy, as I said, it's an absolute privilege to do that. And indeed, if this is the last time I am on this programme, which it may well be, thank you to you and to all your listeners for listening to me and for their understanding through what's been very challenging 5 years.
Well, thanks for being with us today. Appreciate it. The Chief Minister has been with us on Man in Line today. We're back with another open line tomorrow. And thanks to Chris on the phones today.
WINT.